Our sermon today comes from Psalm 40, hearing again verse 8. I delight to do your will, O my God. Your law is within my heart. Several years ago, the church I was attending built a new sanctuary. It was fascinating to watch the progress of the new building each week. And not being part of the building committee or the leadership, there was some mystery and surprise involved, especially as the chancel took shape. It was an expansive chancel with a towering blank wall of sheetrock behind and above the altar, just waiting to be filled with what would be the central feature of the entire sanctuary. At last, it arrived and was fixed in place. It was enormous, precisely proportioned with elegant long lines, sharply angular, and a study in symmetry. Polished to perfection, it gleamed softly with a burnished gold opulence. It was an absolutely perfect cross. I hated it. It was sterile, lifeless, unimaginative, and shiny. I wasn't sure what I had wanted, but I knew it wasn't that. I suspect it's true of every one of us, actually. We all want a cross that looks right, one that does what it's supposed to do, one that fits our ideas of what a cross should be, one that's authentic and real. We want the true cross. Legend tells us that it was on this very day, September 14th, that St. Helena, the pious mother of Emperor Constantine, entered a secret chamber in Jerusalem and found the three crosses of Calvary. Cleverly, she had each laid in turn over the body of an old dying woman. And when at the first touch of the third one, that woman was instantly healed, Helena knew she had the true cross. That cross was, unsurprisingly, lost to history. But not before pieces of it could be scattered all over Christendom, where each could be placed very carefully in a cross or reliquary worthy of veneration for centuries to come, every September 14th, right down to this very day. And while we may not be blessed here in our humble chapel with a relic of the true cross, we've got our own unique serpentine version, ready to be adored. Though I have heard it rumored that some people are less than enthusiastic about our Nehushtan-style cross. As far as they're concerned, it's not what a cross is supposed to be. Maybe, though, it's not just architects, artists, and credulous ancients who get the cross all wrong and lose the true cross. Yes, the cross can be abused and victimized by craftsmen and superstitious saints, but the true cross can be badly distorted and even twisted into a perversion also by serious Christians, lovers of liturgy, and even scholars of theology. It happens. Well-meaning, serious Christian people degrade the true cross when they designate every hard trial, painful suffering, or passing annoyance that intrudes into their lives to be a cross that they must bear. When Jesus declared that anyone who was going to follow him had to do it with a cross on his shoulders, he was not making a veiled reference to a food allergy, a two-week quarantine, the lack of marital prospects, or even a terminal diagnosis. Now, the cross is not a challenge, a hardship, or even very hard, very real suffering. The cross is a long, painful, humiliating, exceedingly effective means of death. Crosses kill people. That's what they do. When you bear your cross, you march to your execution. Self is slain, you die. So, when Christians invoke the cross to make sense of life's difficulties and struggles, they trivialize the true cross into an object of therapy. Of course, the cross is also objectified as another means of therapy when it is pressed into liturgical service, intended to meet the visceral and spiritual needs of participants. Here again, the cross is being bent to fit the desires and sensitivities of people, no matter how well-meaning or how proper they may be. If the cross is little more than a blueprint for a sanctuary, a favorite symbol on a chasuble, or a rote action of the right forearm, or a catalyst for humble liturgical actions of veneration and piety, and it is certainly not the true cross of Christ. The true cross is not a matter of taste or an object of any sorts. It is not an object of sentiment or therapy or liturgy or art or architecture or superstition or veneration. And it must not be reduced even to an object of theological study and reflection, a temptation not unknown in Christian institutions of higher learning. The cross must not be used to solve the legal, logical puzzle of a just God whose wrath needs to be assuaged while somehow his beloved sinful creatures are saved. Yes, this account of the cross makes sense, and it answers questions, but it also legalizes and sanitizes the cross and holds it out at arm's length where it can more safely be considered. Like a villager fending off a vampire, the cross becomes a tool. Even the profound insight of a theology named for the cross can obscure the reality and impact of the true cross. Theologians of the cross all too easily become skilled practitioners of evaluation and judgment, making the cross another object, a tool of self-righteousness. Yes, that happens. You know it. There is cause for caution and circumspection. The tidy solutions and neat explanations of systematic theology too easily end up demeaning the power and significance of the true cross. That cross, the true cross, does one thing. Simply and starkly, it does nothing more than bear the dead weight of Jesus. That is the point of the cross. It's not an object we put to use. The true cross is the means of torture and death appointed for Jesus. The true cross is the place where God's plan for the salvation of his creation was brought to stunning fruition in the innocent death of his own obedient son. And that's why we heard from Psalm 40, where, as he does so often, David delights in the faithful care of God for his creation, the God who inclines to the earth, bending down his head, better to hear the cry of his people. The God who does for his people wonders beyond counting. The God who sends his servant long promised, his son, with his ears dug open and his body ready for work, ready to hear and obey and do everything just as the Father directs, even when that means carrying a cross into the pit of hell itself. In that pit, the Son cries out, but now the Father is silent. In that pit, on that cross, bearing the shame, guilt, reproach, and sin of the world and of you, it is the Son who inclines to the earth below, who bows his head and dies. That's what the true cross is all about. It's the story of God saving his masterwork of the creation from the foolish, sinful, stupid rebellion of his own creatures. The cross is not an object. It is the event in the story that creates, defines, and fulfills all the world. At the heart and center of the Christian faith that claims you and animates you, there is not a poignant human sentiment, not a powerful insight, not an inspiring idea, not a captivating vision, not a universal truth, not even a divine principle. No, at the heart of your faith is a cross with Jesus hung on it, dead. Behold the life-giving cross on which was hung the salvation of the whole world. Indeed, behold, in whatever form it takes, behold and give thanks. It does not matter how it looks, rough-hewn, bedazzled in gems, gold and shiny, austere and gothic, or even Gumby. It makes no difference. They all point to the one true cross. Every cross reflects the one reality of the one true cross, where the Father saved his world, where the Father saved you. Amen. We omit the Te Deum this morning and stand for prayer.